2007. And I will open up the work session on 2175, a public hearing on 2175. Okay, Andy.
Thank you, Chair. House Bill 2175 is a bill that would authorize the Department of Human Services to use abuse and neglect reports to determine fitness of employees and volunteers to provide care through the department or through their community partners. There is a dash one amendment, which is, should be available, and we'll have those available. The amendment would create a committee that in turn would draft an implementation plan and a budget request for the DHS program, Fitness of Employees. It would then require submission of this plan to the 75th legislature.
Thank you, Andy. So we have people from the department that come to testify. Is there a sign? Excuse me, you're just going to, that's fine. Go, come on up.
Good morning. Chair Tomei and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Clyde Psyche. I'm the Deputy Director for Operations for the Department of Human Services. And with me at the table is Eva Kutash, who is the Administrator for our Office of Investigations and Training. And we're here today to testify on the amended version of House Bill 2175, which would give us the authority to use abuse and neglect reports to determine the fitness of employees, volunteers, and providers. And just kind of in a way of review, because I think it was February when we were last here to talk to you about this bill.
Right.
The bill would allow us to do two things. First of all, it would allow us to, upon passage, immediately begin using the information to screen employees and volunteers of the department. And the second thing it would allow us to do is it would allow us to convene a work group, which will be made up of DHS employees, providers, and stakeholders. And during the two-year interim period, we would develop a implementation plan and budget proposal to bring before the next legislative session for approval. Just one other thing I'd like to add. We received the amended version of the bill late Friday afternoon, and after reviewing it, there are a couple of minor changes that need to be made. We'd be happy to work with the committee to make the changes now, or we could also do that once the bill hopefully moves over to the Senate side, whatever you prefer, Madam Chair.
So you'd like to pass it out today, either with us doing a conceptual amendment, or we would pass it out today as it is, and you will try to make the changes on the Senate side.
Madam Chair Tomei, whatever your preference is, we can go either way.
Okay, thank you. Did you have something to add?
No, I was just questions.
Yeah.
Great. Any questions of this?
Madam Chair, what were those minor changes?
Madam Chair, Representative Maurer, I'll let Eva speak to the changes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Representative Maurer, Representative Tomei, for the record, my name is Eva Kutash, and I'm the Manager Director for the Office of Investigations and Training. The changes are threefold. One, the Dash 1 amendments put a level of due process into the bill that looks to call for a contested case hearing, which wasn't what we had envisioned. We hadn't made any determination about what level of due process would be provided to employees who were substantiated for abuse. And so,
but can you show us where in the bill that
sure.
says that?
On the and I don't have the version that you're looking at.
You don't have
possibly.
The amended?
Well, I have one that I printed off at home. and on it is line 16 through 18 on the first page. It's sub 3, a person adversely affected or aggrieved by actions taken by the department pursuant to rules adopted under subsection 2 of this section is entitled to notice an opportunity for hearing in accordance with Oregon Revised Statute. And, Madam Chair, our proposal had been to indicate that they may be entitled to due process or some level of due process. Currently, in Children's Services, there is a a lower level of due process, which is by a committee of DHS employees provided for those individuals who are substantiated for abuse. And I'm sure that you know that there are varying levels in between. A contested case hearing would be a pretty expensive proposition, and we'd like the opportunity to talk with the two-year planning group about what level of due process we'd want to offer.
Thank you. Any further questions? I think that's a pretty major change. I'm somewhat uncomfortable passing it out of this committee when you're wanting to make a change like this.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there are two other changes.
Okay, what are they?
Madam Chair, the two other areas. One, it's not clear to us that it allows for the authority to continue to use child abuse information, which is a federal child abuse law requirement, is contained in the language that was drafted late Friday, so we need to review it for that reason. And then thirdly, the definition of care was included in the amendments, and we had removed it. And including the word care limits us to, at the present time, to covering only DHS employees who provide care, so it would exclude folks who aren't providing care, such as people working at other parts of the department, like Office of Information Technology or some of the other areas where they're not doing direct care. And it was our intent to use it for all employees.
Ms. Kutas, could you show us again in the bill where that's dealt with?
Going to the original bill.
We're not looking at the amendments. We're looking at the original bill.
I apologize. Correct. We had, in our proposed amendments, removed the definition of care, and on the original bill it was the second definition, line 7. But in the amendments, it uses the word care.
It does give the definition.
Doesn't give the definition, but it
That's
uses the word.
Wanting.
Right, DHS employees who provide care. It's on the second page, section 3. DHS shall convene a committee consisting of employees of the department and representatives of entities that provide care on behalf of the department. And it would be our intent to be sure that we're covering all DHS employees, not just those who provide care.
Okay. And was there another change?
No, those are three areas.
All right. That's what they want.
That was the third one. So those are two. There's one more. The one dealing with federal child abuse.
Oh, okay. There's one dealing with federal child abuse.
The second.
Right.
Where is that?
Madam Chair, for this, I wish Georgina Caro was here, but she's not. I have only an email from her from late Friday, which indicates that it doesn't appear to be, and there's a difference between what was amended, what was supplied to us, and what we had originally
That's
proposed.
Fine. And maybe she could come next time. And I think we're just going to hold this over until we're sure from heard from you that you have the bill exactly as you'd like it, and then we will consider a work session.
Okay.
All right.
Great.
Is that satisfactory with you?
Yes, very much so, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We had somebody else, Jan Krall. Thank you so much. I'm sorry, before you go, any other questions from any of the committee? Okay. Thank you so much.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, I'm Jan Krall. I'm the CEO of the Shangri-La Corporation. We serve 1,500 to 1,700 people in seven Oregon counties who have disabilities or who are disadvantaged. I'm here, I think, to register my opposition. I didn't get to see what came out on Friday, so I switched it to neutral. So I'd just like to make my comments into the record and then let you know what we think. I'm representing Shangri-La and the Oregon Rehabilitation Association. We fully support the intention of the bill as we understand it, which is to allow agencies to talk across departments about potential abuse, and also eventually for providers and counties to be able to do the same thing. Our concern with the legislation as we understand it right now is that we don't think that's exactly what it will get at from an operational point of view when we have to try to implement it in our systems. We're concerned that there could be some unintended negative consequences around hiring, partially because of the complicated definitions of abuse across the agencies. They're not the same. And so in my organization, for example, a medication administration could become a substantiated abuse if someone gave someone the wrong medicine. And we have methods of reporting that to our county, and we're very meticulous about it, correcting it and training it, and to put that into a system where we might end up having to address a registry issue or something like that seems to be unnecessarily complex. And I'm not sure if that's really what's going to happen, but that's what it looked like at this point. I came here today just to request that you would consider holding off on implementing the legislation until we could look at the in-depth implications. Our worry, our biggest worry, is, I guess, that it would be implemented at the state level, and then once that were implemented, the roll-up into the community system could be extremely costly and not really get us what we want. So I'm encouraged that you're going to wait and hear a little bit more about it, and would still hope that we would have an opportunity to work with that committee as it's stated, and to get the operational aspects looked at before it becomes law.
Thank you for coming up to testify. And I would assume you'd be working with the department now that they're going to be taking back and looking at the amendments to the amendment, that you will be working with them to make sure that you understand what's going on.
I hope so. We've already met with Clyde to express our concerns early on in February.
Good. Thank you.
Any other
questions of this witness?
Question.
Yes. Representative Collin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my question is just, has your organization been part of the committee or working with the committee as this is developed?
Chair Tomei, Representative Cohen, no, we have not.
Well, Madam Chair, a follow-up, I guess I would just hope that those concerns get discussed. So I would encourage the department to make sure that we can come back with a product that we can all support.
Thank you.
I agree.
Any other questions?
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Does anyone else wish to testify on this bill? All right. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2175. Thank you all. And we will open up the hearing on 2961.
Thank you, Chair. Bill 2961 is a measure that would impose a $3 fee for the filing of petitions for marital annulment, dissolution, or separation, and for the filing of responses to petitions. Provide that the fees collected be paid into a domestic violence clinical program account. It would continuously appropriate these monies to the Department of Higher Education for the purpose of funding domestic violence clinical program at the University of Oregon. There is a -3 amendment to 2961. The -3 amendment would increase the fee to $10 with the same limitations on the use of funds. It would also require this would only be for the assistance or funding clinical legal education programs that provide services to victims of domestic violence, stalking, or sexual assault. In addition, in order to qualify under the amendment, the clinical programs must operate in conjunction at the clinical programs at higher ed institutions must work with clinical programs that operate with at least one nonprofit service provider that does DV services. Monies must be under the amendment, the monies must be distributed in an amount that are proportional to the number of victims served by the particular program as compared to the total number of victims served by all of the clinical programs in the preceding year.
Thank you, Andy. And we have Jonathan. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jonathan Manton. I'm legislative assistant for Senator Floyd Prozanski, and I just wanted to make myself available to answer any questions about this latest round of amendment. I think the administrator obviously did a great job walking us through. At the public hearing, we talked about the -2 which also had the $10 figure raised. And in, from the dash 2 to the dash 3, what we did is basically just two minor changes. We moved the word accredited so that it reflects the institutions of higher education.
Tell us what line you're on there.
Sure, that's line, line 10. So it turns out the clinical programs are not themselves accredited, but the institution of higher education are. So we just moved that word so that it modifies institutions of higher education. And then the second change was we clarified the collaborative component. At the University of Oregon model, which is kind of the one that we want to replicate, that collaborative component is with a nonprofit service provider, which is like sexual assault support services or women's space. And what we wanted to do is to just clarify that we're wanting those nonprofit service providers to provide some training and some counseling services so that the law students and survivors get the benefit of that specialized expertise for the other two schools in the state.
Show us what lines that those are on.
Yeah, Madam Chair, that line, that is line 16.
Any questions of Jonathan about the dash? So this takes place of the dash 1 and the dash 2. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, that's correct.
Any questions?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Olson.
Jonathan, I was just curious if I know we're looking at dash 3s right now, but if I could go back also to the dash 2s and talk to the same time. What was the reasoning or the logic behind increasing the fee from $3 to $10?
Madam Chair, Representative Olson, when we kind of looked at the amount of money that this would generate with a $10 increase and making it eligible for all three schools in the state to receive some funding, we just determined that Representative Holby's request and Senator Pazanski's request that a $10 fee would be more appropriate and generate more appropriate level of funding for those for the programs. It's still, my understanding is that even at $10 per divorce, it depending on the number of divorces that actually take place each year, and we're going to get that figure at the next level as we go to the Revenue Committee. But my understanding is that even at $10, it probably still won't fully fund the three programs.
Okay, thank you.
Colleagues, I'd point out, I think it was from your office, Jonathan, a memo dated Monday, April 2nd. And you show in that those materials how Oregon would compare with other states. Florida charges 55, Iowa 50, et cetera, et cetera. It's on the third page of his memo. Jonathan, do you have that in front of you?
I'm
not sure I received that, but we did get that one in original testimony. It's this document that might be in our folder to help folks.
Yeah,
it's on the back side of the dash twos from the previous.
Madam Chair, yes, I do have that in front of you.
Okay. So do you want to walk us through that?
The back side of the dash two.
Yeah, there's...
There. Yeah. No, it's the same logo.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, there was just some survey data that was put together so that we could see what some other states are doing as far as adding a fee onto the cost of filing for divorce. And this is what we were able to find, that these six other states add a fee onto filing for divorce to pay for various services relating to domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking.
Point out to the last three lines, the fee would not be assessed against low-income filers, as fee waivers are available for the
Madam Chair, what memo are you looking at?
Well,
if you take a look at the dash twos, it's on the back side of it.
Approximately 12,000 divorces in Oregon each year.
Madam Chair, if I may, I've just been given some recent information that there may in fact be more than 12,000 divorces in Oregon each year. That number was provided to the University of Oregon law professor by the Department of Justice initially as a rough estimate of as to the number of divorces each year. As the bill goes, if it moves out of this committee and goes to the next committee, which is House Revenue, they'll do a fiscal impact study there where they'll get the exact number of divorces, and so we'll know precisely what the revenue generated will be. I've been told that it may in fact be more than 12,000 divorces. So we'll see at that level. They'll give us another analysis. But if it is more than 12,000 divorces and generates therefore more revenue than what we are guessing here, with the money being divided between the three schools, it would not generate more revenue than what would be used for these services.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I'm uncomfortable with the increase from 3 to 10 without knowing, having better data. And I'm also, I do have a question, and I apologize for not asking this sooner, but in the bill itself, I'm looking at the fees, line 7 through, 7 down to 20. And I guess I'm confused. It says collect a sum of $99 as a flat uniform filing fee and shall collect $51. And then further down, $50 and $35. Is that all not part of a filing fee for divorce currently?
Jonathan, can you answer that?
Madam Chair, Representative Maurer, as I understand it, I don't have that language right in front of me. But as I understand it, the base fee is a statewide fee, and then counties individually have additional fees. And so I'm not sure if what you're referring to there is.
Okay. So when I'm looking at these figures on the back of, what do you say, Florida, Iowa, Idaho.
Oh, okay.
Are those fees consistent with the uniform filing fees? I guess I'm a little bit confused.
Madam Chair, Representative Maurer, members of the committee, my understanding is that those are fees that are attached in those states, that those are fees that are attached onto the cost of filing for divorce that would not necessarily be a base fee, but that are similarly structured to this.
Oh, okay. I'll take that at face value.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just follow up on what
Representative,
Representative Maurer was asking. So what is the base fee?
I think it's... I'm just looking. Representative Olson. It looks like on line 8, the base fee, it looks like, is $99. And then they should collect $51 as a that flat from filings.
So that's 150.
Right. And then, according to this document, that it cost of filing for divorce varies by county from $195 to $371. So each county apparently then can add on more money, more fees.
Well, I understand what the bottom line is, then. Don't get divorced.
Sounds good to me. Representative Gilliam.
You before me, go ahead.
Thank you. Madam Chair, the way I'm reading this is it's $10 on top of the $99 flat fee and $10 on top of the $51 fee. Is that correct?
That's how I read it, too.
A rookie question here, Madam Chair.
Yes, rookie. Representative Gilliam.
Do we just quote different sections of Oregon statute to clarify it, or are we addressing other fees?
All we're doing, Representative Gilliam, as I understand it, is on the original bill. Do you have that?
Yep.
Okay. All we're doing is taking out lines 21 through 25 and putting in the amendment.
For the $10.
Correct.
But what I don't understand up there, like 7 to 20, Does it just cite the current statute in order to give you a context? It's not changing that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I got a lot of nods while you were looking down. That's fine. Yeah.
Thank you all. Are we comfortable passing this, or are you feeling that you still have so many questions that... Yes.
Madam Chair, thank you. So this has a subsequent referral to Rev?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think in the interest of... I do think it's important to move it along. The Revenue Committee would certainly have, once they have some of the numbers that I think everyone was looking for, could certainly adjust the amount, which I think would be better in their purview to do, because they're trying to see if that matches what we're trying to spend. So, although I understand my colleague's concern about maybe clarifying that now, I would be okay about moving on with the assumption that revenue is going to look at that very issue more thoroughly.
Other feedback? It's kind of...
That's all right.
Mallard. Monday morning.
I know. Well, that's. I apologize. I feel like a freshman in high school. I'm just not prepared for Monday morning. The language in the amendment for Section 3 clearly is appropriate. I mean, that's
okay.
I'm uncomfortable with the $3 to $10. But that's really a revenue issue. And overall, on the bill, I express my concerns, and I can do that in the discussion. But I'm still, the sword cuts both ways. That I don't like raising fees, just in general, unless we have a darn good reason. But on the other side, you know, this raises the bar for divorce by $3 or $10, which is a good thing. And it also funds the domestic violence, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying this cuts both ways for me.
I can appreciate that. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
If you buy into the purpose, which I did, one piece, we don't have this nailed down, but one piece that convinces me to go ahead is that if we're trying to replace the federal funding of a program we believe in, this won't do it. That may or may not help anybody. This will, by some projections, give it, even going to $10, will give it half of what it has been. So I just throw that out as something that helped my thinking out of going ahead to $10. But that may not cure your heartburn. I don't know.
If I may, that
Representative Mallard.
I'm sorry, ma'am.
That's okay.
But the I think it is appropriate to get for the Revenue Committee to have more solid numbers, because I think they are going to, you know, we're policy, so we get some latitude, but they're going to, I would hope that they demand more hard numbers.
They will, sure. Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's been my observation that the Revenue Committee, which has some interesting characters serving on it, really likes detail and thoroughness. So I think that the numbers would be explored with great vigor there.
Are you on that committee, Representative?
Along with your other Vice Chair, yes.
Oh, great. Well, then, in good hands. Okay, any other questions of Jonathan?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
And Jonathan, as you do bring this, what Representative Gelser said, exploring the numbers, because we do like to do that, the revenue, I would be extremely interested in some comparisons of what these states that are identified with their fees and what type of an impact that has been, not just from the domestic violence for the training throughout the state and everything, but also the impact that possibly it might have been a curve, what Representative Mallard suggested, you know, with the double-edged sword and the impact on divorce. I'm just curious.
Mm-hmm.
Chair Tim A. Representative Wilson, I'd be happy to get that information for you.
Okay. Thank you.
And we had, I'll just add kind of for the record, I had discussions just this week with Legislative Fiscal about next steps and really securing the exact number. And I wanted to raise that to your attention just to be completely forthright, that I had been given some information towards the end of last week that $12,000 figure may, in fact, we needed to just verify that. So I wanted to bring that to you guys' attention.
Thank you, Jonathan. Any further questions of Jonathan before we let him go? Thank you so much. Representative Gelser.
I would, Madam Chair, I would move the dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2961.
Representative Gelser moves the dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2961. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
One no for the record?
Two no's, ma'am.
Okay, sorry, I didn't hear you. That's two right. No's for the record. All right, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move House Bill 2961 as amended to the Revenue Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gelser moves House Bill 2961 as amended to the House Committee on Revenue with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Susan, please call the roll.
Representative Cowan?
Aye.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative
Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative
Kotek?
Aye.
Representative Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Chair Tomei? Aye. House Bill 2961, having gotten the constitutional majority, passes and goes to the House Revenue Committee with a due pass recommendation. Thank you, committee. Yes.
Madam Chair, I just want to let you know that I'm reserving judgment on this and that on the floor I reserve the right to vote no.
I appreciate that.
Wish I knew. I
can understand that. Well, hopefully we'll have more information after it passes the Revenue
it.
Committee.
Thanks.
So thank you very much for your vote. Thank you.
Oh, are we ready?
I close the committee, the work session on House Bill 2961. Thank you.
So we don't have enough copies for everybody?
They just came. Right.
Okay.
So I could walk through what they are.
Okay.
It would be helpful.
Sure. Okay. We're going to open up the work session on House Bill 3328. And we have hot new amendments. And we're going to have it modifies the procedures involved in child abuse investigations. So which amendments are these, the dash?
They're going to be the dash sixes. Do people have the dash fives at their desk? There's only one small change from the dash fives, and I can walk you through the most substantive changes while we're waiting for the copies.
We haven't even heard about the dash fives, have we? So why don't you walk through the dash fives, and then we'll be with the dash
sixes. Thank you, Madam Chair. The Dash 5 amendments, if you remember when we had the public hearing last week, there was some question about the use of terminology and whether or not we wanted to refer to the types of injuries that are mentioned in Section 3 as apparent abuse or suspicious physical injury. And the consensus afterwards seemed to be moving towards suspicious physical injury. And I have spoken since then with the district attorneys who had initially expressed concern with the use of physical injury, since physical injury itself is defined elsewhere in the law, and they are comfortable with having that here. The word suspicious is there, and it's the definition refers to this point of the bill only. Otherwise, it's the dash fives are exactly what you saw last time in terms of the dash threes, but I hoped that I could walk you through a couple of other conversations that have happened since that period of time. Some of you may have received questions, and before I did that, I really wanted to thank Una Swanson and Mickey Cerise and the Department of Human Services, who've been incredibly helpful in putting this together, working past 5 o'clock on Friday night to deal with some issues, and it's just such a pleasure to work with the child welfare folks over at DHS, and I'm very appreciative for your assistance. After the hearing, I had the opportunity to meet with a number of folks from some of the other child abuse assessment centers. Dr. Charbonneau, who testified to us, works at the ABC House in Albany, and we have several of these across the state. And on Thursday morning, I met with probably five individuals from different places, rural and more urban areas. We walked through the bill, and we are going to meet again later this week just to make sure that there might not be more changes that we might consider on the Senate side. One of the changes that you'll see as a result of that conversation in the dash sixes when they come back is if you look in section 3 on page 2, line 29, it says, to the extent practicable, the person conducting the child abuse medical assessment may not be the child's regular pediatrician or family physician. At the advice of the assessment centers, we're taking that out, and that's the protection for the kids is that they still, in that sub-C, which would stay, lines 2 through 8 on page 3, that physician would still have the opportunity to be sharing the photos and doing some consultation with someone that is trained in child abuse assessment. Some of the concerns that the assessment centers raised, they wanted to be sure that this bill did not mean that every child abuse injury would have to be seen only at those assessment centers, which was kind of scary for these folks because they're pretty overburdened as it is. And the way that the bill is written, that's not what the intention is, that all of these children would be going to the assessment centers. One of the neat features about this bill is when the county multidisciplinary team meets and they're trying to identify these medical professionals that are available to them, and that could be a physician or a physician's assistant or a nurse practitioner, that they're going to go out and reach out to that community in their county to say, who is it that's available to do these? Who wants to step up to the plate to be one of these resources to us? That could be a pediatrician, it could be a nurse practitioner, not necessarily at that assessment center. What's going to happen when people step forward is they're going to take on a greater responsibility and interest in child abuse assessment, which is going to raise the level of expertise within the community. The bill doesn't say that there's only one. There can be as many. It can include the assessment centers, but it can include other people as well. The other thing that's important to remember, one of the assessment centers, it was at CARES up in Portland, talked about receiving thousands of referrals, and they refer them back out to other pediatricians and other physicians and nurse practitioners and physician's assistants that they trust in the community. This bill actually speaks to that, and when it says that the child receives a medical assessment, it's a medical assessment by that designated physician or anybody that physician designates. So there's nothing that changes in the practice right now where a call goes to that assessment center. If the assessment center is one of those resources the multidisciplinary team chooses, all of those folks retain that ability to refer to other people that they trust and that they know. One of the things that was interesting to me in the conversation with the assessment centers on Thursday was the clarification that this is a bill about physical abuse. It's not a bill that speaks in any place specifically to sexual abuse. And what was interesting, one of the assessment center folks said that 80% of the work that they do there relates to sexual abuse, even though sexual abuse accounts for only about 15% of the abuse that's inflicted on children. And one of the things that they expressed was the appreciation of having some focus on physical abuse and improving the awareness within the multidisciplinary teams and the local medical communities about physical abuse. In the dash sixes, which are coming back right on time, the change is that if you read through the bill, and I'll just give you one example, which would be on page 2 of the dash 5s, lines 13 through 15. It says, ensure that a designated medical professional conducts a child abuse medical assessment as defined in ORS 418-782 within 48 hours or sooner if dictated by the child's medical needs. A child abuse medical assessment currently has a very specific meaning in the law and to the Oregon Health Plan and would refer to a very complex, very expensive examination that's done oftentimes as a result of a sexual abuse investigation. And so what we have done is removed the words child abuse. What the intent here is that the children are receiving a medical assessment, that they're receiving medical assessments by folks that are prepared and planning to be looking for child abuse assessment. And with that change, it became the department's position that the fiscal on this bill would be minimal and absorbed by the department, which was very exciting.
Representative, I'd like to go just a second. On page 3,
yes,
line 9, that was something that, well, actually it's on 6 on the dash 6 amendment. You changed child abuse medical assessment to medical assessment. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Right. In all of them, every place where it said, with the exception of one, and I'll tell you about that one in a minute, with all of them, we changed the reference from child abuse medical assessment to medical assessment. And that is because child abuse medical assessment has a broader, has a very specific meaning, and that isn't necessarily what the need of each of these children is. The need is for them to have a medical assessment by someone that has a trained eye that knows that they're looking in terms of a child abuse situation. But by removing the word child abuse, making it medical assessment instead of child abuse medical assessment, made it possible to, it made it less onerous for the department and made sure that we weren't over serving and putting kids through a more complex assessment than their needs might dictate.
Great.
Hold on.
That's experiment. Oh, thank okay. you.
The one place where the word child abuse medical assessment has been left, the only place that it's left, if you look at page 7, line 10 through 12, we're still asking that physician, physician assistant, or nurse practitioner that they're identifying, or practitioners, it's important to remember these can be in the plural, that they can do a child abuse medical assessment. That doesn't mean that they are going to do this complete assessment every time, but that they have that level of expertise to understand child abuse when they are doing that. And that protects it. If you remember, that is on page 7, lines 10 through 15. And one of the reasons that it's reasonable to leave that there, we know that not every county is going to have the ability to do this or have these people that are available to them when it starts. And that's why the bill asks that each county multidisciplinary team make their best effort. And if they're not able to do it, instead they write up a plan and a report that they give to the Department of Justice and that they're going to bring back to us in the interim that talks about what were the obstacles to identifying that professional expertise in their community, and what would the cost and policy assistance be that those multidisciplinary teams would need to achieve the goal of having these resources available to the kids in the community. So that might be recruitment, that might be that they have people that are willing but aren't trained and they need additional financial support to do that training. And so by keeping that reference in there that this physician has that training in child abuse, we're ensuring that wherever that kid goes, that they are seeing someone that knows how to discern between the story that's been given about why a child has an injury and what that injury actually is.
Any other questions of Representative Gelser, who's done a phenomenal job on this bill?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, Representative Gelser's done a load of work on this. And I think her point around the child abuse center, the CAMI centers being interested in the physical abuse aspect is really important. This could have the positive unintended consequence of helping to build capacity in these communities with different professionals to help them in their work, because they are only seeing a slice of abused children and primarily ones that have indications of sexual abuse. There is a lot of other issues that we need to build capacity in the communities, and I think this bill is going to help us get there. It's really important.
Thank you, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would point out one other difference that's in this bill, that the department had indicated when they testified last week that because of the changes in technology, there's some new rules around photographs and the use of photographs. And the one thing around photography that's made clear here, and this was an issue that was raised by one of the physicians that came to speak to me, was the real challenges of photographing kids who have already been victimized and the need for sensitivity in doing that, and in particular really being careful about who it is that's taking photographs of children's intimate areas. And the bill specifies that only medical professionals are going to be taking those kinds of photos of children's genitalia and other kinds of things, which provides some direction and also provides some protection when that CPS worker or law enforcement is out there, they're investigating an injury, the child discloses that there's an injury to their intimate areas, they aren't going to think, okay, now I need to take them into a room and take a photograph. The bill is clear that we're leaving that to medical professionals that can do that in the most therapeutic possible way with the greatest possible sensitivity for the kids.
And she's referring to Section 5 on page 4, lines 15 and 16. Any other questions or concerns? Representative Olson.
Madam Chair. Representative Gelser, I'm just curious. I think we had some of this discussion before, but I'm just curious, too, the sharing of evidence, the photographs. Did you discuss that? I mean, for example, we know that law enforcement's going to go out and take photographs, and that's going to be part of their duty for, you know, collecting evidence and everything like that. But let's say a member from DHS takes photographs too. That in itself turns out to be evidence. What's the connection there for being able for law enforcement to retrieve that?
Right. If you look in Section 5 around the photographs, it talks about the disposition of the photographs after they're taken. Those photographs become part of the pertinent files for the child that are maintained either by law enforcement or by the Department of Human Services. The photos are also not provided to permanently, but made available to the county multidisciplinary team should it be needing to staff that particular child's case. And the point here is to be sure that when there's photographic evidence, all of the folks that are participating in that child abuse investigation that need access to those photographs have them. When I originally started working on the bill, it was actually our district attorney, our former district attorney from Benton County, who had been interested in the bill speaking directly to chain of evidence, and particularly around digital photography because of concerns about manipulation of photos. That became an issue that the district attorneys association didn't want to pursue. It's not an issue that's been raised in trials at this point, and they were concerned that addressing it could create more problems than it might alleviate.
Very good. Thank you.
Any further questions? DHS is here. Is there anything that you wish to say before we vote on this? Thank you for your hard work. We really appreciate it. We appreciate Representative Gelser's hard work and other people that have worked with you, Representative Gelser.
Madam Chair, there's one unusual thing that we have to do about this bill. If you'll remember when it was printed, because there were a number of different people that were interested in the bill and there were some drafting errors, we adopted some amendments that were a gut and stuff so that people could start on the same page. Because that was a gut and stuff and the dash sixes that I'm hoping we'll adopt today are a gut and stuff, we have to rescind the dash two amendments that we previously adopted before we can adopt the dash sixes.
Okay, do you want to make that motion?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that we rescind the dash two amendments to House Bill 3328.
Representative Gelser moves that we rescind the dash two amendments to House Bill 3328. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And opposed, nay. We rescind dash two amendments. All right. Are we ready to vote? Any further discussion? Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move the dash six amendments to House Bill 3328.
Representative Gelser moves the dash six amendments to House Bill 3328. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Dash six amendments are moved to House Bill 3328. Representative Gelser.
Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 3328 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gelser moves House Bill 3328 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Susan, would you call the roll, please?
Representative
Kellogg?
Aye.
Representative
Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Gillian?
Aye.
Representative Kotek?
Aye.
Representative
Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Chairman May?
Aye. House Bill 3328, having received the constitutional majority, has declared passed, as amended, has declared passed. Congratulations, Representative.
Good job.
Yes. And House Bill 3328, as amended, will go to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
You're thinking of who should carry it?
I don't know.
Who should?
Let's draw straws.
Representative Gelser, would you please carry this bill on the floor?
Probably. Yes, thank you.
Let me close the work session on House Bill 3328. Thank you all. That's fantastic, Representative Gelser. I know how hard you've worked on this. Good job. Good job, Department. Okay. Any other business that we need to do? Representative Gillian looks like he has some thoughts.
I'm hoping to have a bill someday.
There's still time.
We're halfway through, so okay. We've still got time. All right. No other business? All right. I declare closed the House Committee on Human Services and Women's Wellness. Thank you all. See you on Wednesday.
Well, that goes to the first step. Pretty